Thank you, everyone, for listening to the Detroit Bad Boys podcast, our special draft preview of the pod. I'm very excited. I've got two guys who know the draft very well and are ready to talk draft, and we have a lot to cover. The Pistons have two picks, of course, in the upcoming NBA draft that is Thursday night. You know, the season just ended, but it's a quick turnaround, and NBA fans, that there's really not much of an off season. It just continues. We've got the draft on the horizon, and we want to preview it for you. We want to look at pick number 18, some players that might be of interest to the Pistons in that spot, and then also looking into the second round, pick number 49 that the Pistons have, some players that we might value at that pick as well. So joining me to talk about the draft and picks 18 and 49 and all things Pistons and all things draft related are two guys I'm very excited to have on the podcast, starting with a returnee, Jacob Kuyvenhoven. How are you, Jacob?
I'm great. How are you doing, Jordan?
Doing well. I'm excited to talk draft with you. And also joining us, I'm sure you've seen many of his articles, especially some of the great draft articles that he's had on player previews and many of the other things that he's covered as a writer for the Detroit Bad Boys, Steve Henson. How are you, Steve?
Doing well. Good to talk to you, Jordan.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to this, guys. So let's go right into it. I think there were some interesting comments made today by Stan Van Gundy in his press conference regarding the Pistons and how they're going into the draft, what their team, what the front office's thought process is. Steve, I'm not sure if you caught any of that, but what did you take away is the Pistons, brass, what are they thinking going into this draft?
Well, it sounds to me like, you know, Stan Van Gundy's keeping his cards pretty close to his chest. He's, it sounded like some platitudes where he's talking about that position won't have any bearing on who it is that they take, that they're just looking for the best player available, that the team's already pretty balanced, and so it's not going to impact free agency or anything like that. And he also talked a bit about how he seemed to be a bit bemused by the idea of mock drafts having much of a bearing as to who's going to fall where for him. And, you know, I think that's kind of a fair point with it seems like they do have their own idea of who is, you know, they seem to have their own ranking as to what player belongs at what part of the draft. But overall, it sounded to me like they're keeping their option entirely open. But, you know, some of it might just be some of that pre-draft smokescreen type of stuff.
Yeah, exactly. That's kind of what I thought as well. But going in the draft, I think clearly the roster does have some needs. I agree with Stan Van Gundy that the roster is pretty balanced. At least we have a good idea of who the core will be going into next season. But Jacob, what do you think of the strategy of going with the best player available in this draft?
I don't mind it. I do agree with Stan Van in the sense that there isn't really a position that you can look at as truly being locked in. Even at center with Andre Drummond, you do have the need for some more high-quality minutes behind him. Obviously, backup point guard is a need. You have a lot of questions at shooting guard. Might not even be able to keep KCP after this upcoming season. And then on the wing, you got some good players. You got some combo forwards, but you could certainly look to add some more size, some more rebounding, or some more playmaking there. So I think there you could really look anywhere on this team.
Yeah, I think that's very true. And with some of the mock drafts I've looked at, and I know Stan said not to take mock drafts too seriously, but it seems there's not a player that many insiders or you know people who put together mock drafts have really targeted for the Pistons. It is really all over the board. So going into Thursday night, is there a single player you expect the Pistons to take at number 18? Let's just go right into it. So Jacob, what player do you expect the Pistons to take at number 18?
Well, it's kind of a loaded question, right? Because who is going to be available? And I think that's why at number 18, it's hard for there to be a lot of consensus. I think that they will be interested in Denzel Valentin. I know that that's kind of like an overbeaten point. And I don't think he'll necessarily even be the best player on the board, but I'm sure he's a player that they'll look at. They'll be looking at backup point guard for sure. I think Tyler Ulis is a name that I've heard a lot. Tyler Ulis, something like that. Wade Baldwin is a guy who I look at as kind of a awesome situation. That would be a great fit and a great landing spot for him, but he's a guy who I'm not sure is going to be there. So I think if he's there, they're taking him. Same possibly with Luwawu, the small forward out of France. Same possibly with Jakob Poeltl. But you just sort of don't know. I think if I had to take a stab at it, I would say that they are taking Valentin, but I do not feel confident with that at all.
Yeah, it's definitely not something you can say with confidence, because you're right. Being at number 18, we have no idea, and really in this draft in particular, from after pick 2, I think it's really anyone's best guess what the players will be and what order they're taken between 3 and 17. So I think you're right. It's tough to say with any confidence who it's going to be. Steve, is there any group of players? I know Jacob just did some heavy name dropping. Is there a group of players that you have as well that you have in mind at 18?
Yeah, you know, if I had to put money on who it's going to be, I would be guessing Kyler Ulis, or yeah, however you pronounce his name. Just because of the fact that I think that he's one of those, you don't see a lot of guys who come out of college, and especially at a pretty young age, who are ready to take command of an offense, who are able to balance distributing and getting their own scoring as adeptly as he's able to. I do think that there's going to be some growing pains for him with his size, with his scoring in the paint. There's a few red flags I see with him in terms of just how reliant he is on his right hand, and just the jump he made from his freshman to his sophomore year. It seemed like he was strictly a jump shooter as a freshman. And once he was able to open up that game as a sophomore, he really brought a lot more to the table. But I think that I don't think that Stan Van Gundy is going to be scared away by his size. He's gone after Isaiah Thomas as a free agent. He's gone after a guy like Norris Cole. DJ Augustin didn't have a whole lot of size. So true. I think that, you know, Ulis could very well be the pick there. If I was able to hedge my bet with a couple other names, I really don't think that they're going to go for a wing player, both because of the fact that they've got so much youth there, and Stanley Johnson, KCP, Hilliard, and Reggie Bullock too. There's an awful lot of young players there that they're in pretty good shape, and most of the talent available is kind of redundant with them. So I think that they'd be looking more at a big man. I don't think that they're going to go with one of these projects like Scal, you know, Laboresi, however you pronounce his name, from Kentucky, or Thon Macker, or Cheek Diallo. I'm sorry, I can't pronounce any of these guys' names.
They're not easy names.
No, they're not.
Yeah, I hope I'm at least getting close, but if I had to pick one big man who I think they might target, it'd be another kind of wild name, but Ance Zizek, I think, is how you'd go with it. But
sure.
Coming out of the Adriatic League, he's a guy with great size and plays with a lot of intensity. He's a beast on the boards. He's similar to Yusuf Nurkić. Oh, boy. So we could use some easy names here. I wish I liked Diamond Stone better, or Damian Jones, but Ant Zizek, I think he's going to transition really well. But also, I think a key factor for him is he's a very good free throw shooter, which isn't the case for most of the big men that we're looking at there. So those would be one of my two calls there.
Well, so far, all the names that both of you have mentioned are players that, at least from the sense I'm getting from the draft, are probably available at number 18. Are there any players that you could see dropping in the draft that you would say to yourself, the Pistons have to take this player if he's on the board? Don't say Ben Simmons, but if there's someone that drops in this draft, who is it that you say, okay, the Pistons have to take him if he's there at 18?
For me, for Steve, it would be Henry Ellenson. I think you got a guy as productive as he has been at such a young age, putting up 17 and 10 as a 19-year-old freshman. And with his shooting ability, too, I think that he would get a very, very strong look if he's still on the board at 18.
Jacob, anyone come to mind?
I would echo Ellenson. I mean, I think he's a guy who could potentially fall because teams worry about his defense and his ability to play full-time minutes at center. But he would be a pretty perfect backup center in Detroit. I think the ones that I mentioned before, Pirtle and Baldwin, are pretty unlikely to be there at 18. And I really wouldn't see someone who's clearly a better prospect than them falling all the way to 18. So that's sort of who I would go with. Maybe if everyone's just totally scared off of the internationals or some sort of red flag comes up, maybe you could think about Bender, but I really don't think that's happening.
Yeah, I have seen Bender drop a bit recently, and There was a player that I really loved in this draft that I thought for sure was going to be available at 18, Domantas Sabonis. And now it seems like he's going to be a top 12 pick in this draft. I even read a little earlier on Twitter, and I of course take Twitter with a grain of salt, but I saw that Sacramento has interest in Sabonis at number 8, which is very interesting because he was someone that early in this process looked like a late first round pick. But again, I think similar worries to a guy like Henry Ellenson that, you know, not sure how much time he can play at the 5. Who does he defend? If he gets switched on a pick and roll, is he just going to be as lost as he's looked on some film? So I think there's some big men with questions, but there's also some value, especially on the offensive end. I think with each of the guys we've mentioned so far, Ellison, Sabonis, if one of them drops a bit in the draft, it's probably the questions about their defense, but they definitely are providing something on the offensive end. Are there any defensive specialists, anyone on that side of the ball that, or at least it seems like that's their strength that you like in this draft in the first round?
Someone like Taurean Prince, I think, could be a really good fit with the Pistons.
Out of Baylor?
Yep, the rebound definition guy.
That's right. That's right. Yeah, yeah. He's someone that, you know, a definite small forward. You know, fits that 3 spot. Yeah, I love the comment about the rebound against against Yale.
I love the rebound comment. I mean, he's a guy I think who I look at as being able to switch 1 through 4, which is something that I think the Pistons do value. And if he can hit a 3, he's going to have a 15-year career. So I like him. And I mean, I guess the other, if they're really in the market for a rim protector, I guess you could look at Davis out of Michigan State. I saw him going in the top 10 about a month ago, and now it looks like teams are just a little scared away. I know he isn't looked at it necessarily like the most high character guy, which I think is a little unfair sometimes to ask of a college freshman. But if he's a guy who falls and they're looking for some defense out of the 5 slot, he could be a really good selection there.
Yeah, and someone similar that's right around that pick is Cheick Diallo. That's my attempt to pronounce his name. The big man out of Kansas that had a really great combine, and his measurables are fantastic, but his production was limited, and he actually was on the bench quite a bit in Kansas. So I think there's some questions there about his game. But that's someone that just looking at measurables, I'm pretty interested in. And another player that kind of just jumps out when you know you're kind of going through, and I'm sure everyone right now, you're looking at Draft Express every day. You're trying to get an idea of certain players in this draft. Thon Maker. That's someone that, if you've seen the highlight tape that was out a few years ago on Thon Maker, this guy's been a legend to draftniks like us for a couple years now. Do you like the fit of a player that, you know, might be a bit raw? Do you see the Pistons going after a player like that, Steve, who maybe it's going to take a few years for him to reach his potential?
You know, I really don't so much. I just don't see a whole ton of players who fit that type of profile who wind up being huge successes. I see some of the video of him working out and that sort of thing, and he just looks like he has great intentions, but that's about the nicest thing I can say. he's certainly got a lot of raw natural ability, and that he does have some skills that might be able to be cultivated, but he's just such a long ways away that I don't think he'd even be all that successful in the D League next year. I look at a guy like Clint Pello, who was drafted from Houston and spent that first year in Haitian last year. And, you know, Capello, he dominated the D League, but he was one of those very raw type of players. And I think it's just going to be a tough road for Maker to really make it. Oh, wow. Yeah. That was not intentional. But one other defense specialist that I will mention is Chinanu Onuaku from Louisville. He's one of those guys who looks like he should be ready to go right off the bat. He was a solid rebounder. He was blocking a lot of shots in Louisville. And also, he's still pretty young. So he does bring that combination of a pretty decent size and solid athleticism and some more productivity than some of these guys like Macker or you know, Key being a bit of a mystery guy or the fella from Kansas.
I think you're bringing up a good point in terms of just, it's kind of a fool's game to try to find immediate contributors out of rookies with the 18th pick. I mean, the amount of guys who even are positive players to winning basketball as a rookie is tiny, let alone with this pick. So I think it's somewhat realistic to expect the Pistons to draft a guy who they have to wait on. I think a lot of cases, you're right, guys don't just sit on the bench for 2 years and then all of a sudden turn into stars. But I think a lot of the times these guys get drafted and then the team that's drafting them thinks, you know, they're a little bit away, ways away, but then when they start playing, you sort of see these flashes. And even if it's only in 10 or 15 minutes a game and you only see these flashes occasionally, the guy just plays a lot better than the people who said that he's 3 years away expected him to.
Right, right. That seems to be the case for some of these really raw guys who wind up being successful, that they do, that they're showing you something that is success. And I think we see that a little bit with Cheick Diallo. You know, that he's not getting on the floor all that much, but he's having some success while he's out there. With Macker, it's just kind of tough just with how little we can draw from to see what he would actually look like if he were getting some real minutes. You know, if he were playing some more organized basketball at a high level, you know, maybe there would be some things that would stand out as to, hey, mm-hmm. here's something that we can build on. But I think about some of these other guys who are kind of raw and toolsy, who just they're never able to put it all together, whether it's Tony Mitchell, who was coming for the Pistons not long ago, or like Perry Jones, just these guys who do have a lot of skills to them and are kind of that power forward who can play on the perimeter and has that shooting ability. They seem to have so much trouble putting it together that I'd just be kind of skeptical. And it's not really a route I see Bauer and Stan Van Gundy going.
The alternative to selecting a guy that's toolsy is the idea that you think that Stan Van Gundy is going to trust a rookie to actually be his secondary ball handler and his primary backup point guard, which is also another route that I think the Pistons are signing a backup point guard, and I don't think Van Gundy is going to trust even a point guard who is supposedly ready. I mean, you have guys like that, like a guy, why can't I think of his? Oh, Tyus Jones, you know, he's a guy who led finals, you know, sure. Most outstanding player. He's a Final Four MIP and, you know, was just this amazing college player. And, you know, he gets to the pros and he's not ready. And I just don't see Van Gundy not really looking for a solution at backup point guard except in the draft with the number 18 pick. So I think it's almost more likely that he'll look for someone who could maybe be a contributor a little bit more down the road.
Yeah, and I think even decisions to bring in someone like Steve Blake shows you that that this is a front office that values having a veteran in that spot. Jacob, I completely agree with you. And because of that, and really all of us saying, you know, we're probably not looking for an immediate impact player with this pick. And the Pistons at the 18th spot, okay, you're in the playoffs now. Congratulations, but where are you going from here? Maybe this is an asset that we look into trading. Jacob, do you see us trading this pick? And what do we have to get in return for it to be worth it to you?
I mean, I think you have to get a player on a rookie deal. And, I mean, what you look at the guys who are traded for mid-first-round picks, I just don't really see the appeal. I mean, I'm not going to do this trade for Tim Hardaway Jr. I'm not going to be doing this trade for Grievous Vasquez. So unless someone's willing to give me something like, I don't know, like Mo Harkless or something, and then you get your restricted match rights, maybe that's something that I would think of. But I would have to... It would have to be a young guy on a deal that was tradable and locked in for a while.
Steve, what do you think about that? And what do you think of the idea of trading the pick?
Well, me personally, I'm not very hyped on this draft. I think it's one of the worst drafts that we've seen in terms of talent perspective in quite a little while. I'm sure there will be some of the guys who are available when we pick who will go on to have good, successful careers. But, you know, just it's always a gamble. But that gives you, you know, that fewer balls in the lottery or however you want to look at that. Mm-hmm. So for me, I would be 100% in favor of trading it in favor of a guy who you know may not have the excitement level of or the sky's the limits of a guy like Maker. You know, some people compare him to Kevin Garnett. Personally, I think that's is forgetting about how early Garnett really was.
Oh yeah,
but if you're able to get him for you know, we did the off-season plan project, and I was looking at a guy like DeLon Wright, who played a couple years in college. He's pretty well seasoned. He's been successful in the D League, and Toronto, they don't really have many minutes for him. So maybe we could try getting a hold of Wright and still have that young player, but a little bit more experience, and you've got a little bit of a better idea of what you'll get for him. Or another possibility would be Patrick Beverley. You know, I don't know how much Houston would want to be revisiting a trade for that 18 pick after the trade deadline shenanigans. But Beverley, he's locked in for a long term team friendly deal. He's still relatively young. He's very effective on both ends of the court, and he would really be a surefire solution to the backup point guard position.
Would be, though, because I mean, he can't create anything for himself, and he really was only ever been successful in his career playing as a spot up shooter next to Harden.
That's true.
But I mean, I think that is sort of the guy that you want to look at, though. I mean, you just named two guys who are young and locked in on deals, which I think is the only thing I'd really consider.
Yeah, and I think that's kind of what you've got to do. I think going for someone who's just going to be a salary dump for someone else, or who's going to get in the way of whatever you're trying to accomplish in free agency, you're kind of, you know, solving one solution but creating another problem.
And maybe it's just that I don't really buy so much the bad draft thing. I mean, 2013 was supposed to be such a terrible draft, and you still have stuff like Rudy Gobert going number 27 and stuff. I think it's just I'd rather take the shot than trade for a guy who's going to be making – six times as much money without really any opportunity for growth within your team. I mean, if you want to be the eighth seed, then yeah, I'd probably trade the pick, but I just think that good teams hold on to their draft picks.
Yeah, I agree. Even if I don't see us using either of our picks as a way to stash a player, but Jacob, I agree with you that we should be looking to this draft, even if it is a weak draft, just in terms of talent. I think there's enough to find at that 18 pick that there's some value to it. And really this is going to be a great test for Bauer and SVG. I think this pick could be very important. It could be a role player. It could be someone that kind of is the difference between the Pistons getting home court advantage or not in the first round of the playoffs here in the next few seasons. Just adding a player like that, I think could be, you know, pretty valuable. So I'm interested then at how much we look at international prospects, because I think there's some really interesting international prospects. They have some big questions in their game, but there are quite a few guys that I really like. I think I think Jacob, you had mentioned Luwawu, the wing, or Furkan Korkmaz out of Turkey.
Mm-hmm.
I think there are a couple guys on international that. Again, it's testing your scouting department and testing what you know about a guy, but I think there's some international players that could give you some value at that spot.
Absolutely, and it's not really a path that the Pistons have taken heavily since 2003, rightfully so, most likely. But, you know, maybe the stink has worn off that they'd given another go.
That's true. I mean, Dumars is not associated with this pick anymore, so you're right.
That's true.
I think we can get away from this. And also, Steve, thank you for reminding me that this pick was Donuts. This pick was supposed to be Donatas Motiejunas. So, yeah, now that we're stuck with it, it will be interesting to see if we can trade out of it or not after trying at the deadline. Are there any, and Jacob, I think what I was getting at, are there any sleepers? I guess they don't have to be international players, but players that you like, that you want the Pistons to take at 18?
I mean, I would be happy with picking one Hernan Gomez, the power forward out of Estudiantes. He's just a really intriguing player to me as an athletic stretch four who can jump, can switch. He reminds me a little bit of the player that Jonas Jerebko is in Boston. You know, not a guy who's really going to necessarily break the game open for you, but he's a good defender who can hit threes and is a hard matchup for a smaller player. And I think that's sort of what you're looking for out of your second unit if you are able to sign a guy who can create offense for himself and others.
Yeah, Steve, do you have any sleepers or any certain players that you want the Pistons to take at 18?
Well, you know, they talk about having their own list going and, you know, sort of marching to the beat of their own drum. I think Kay Felder is a guy who we've seen in a lot of folks is on our radar that he's got a lot of fans with the DBB base, and I think rightfully so. He is a very impressive player, and being contrasted with another smaller point guard in Ulis, in that he is more focused, he's more of a scoring oriented guy who he is really the front and center of the offense. Everything revolves around him. And so for me, he's not quite I like Ulis better, but I could see why Felder would be a very attractive sleeper prospect.
Yeah, I agree. He was the player I picked in my offseason plan project in the second round. And yeah. I see him going anywhere between, I've seen a mock having him right at the end of the first round. I've seen mocks with him going 55. So the range is pretty wide. And Jacob, we had just kind of mentioned there are so many international prospects in this draft, and so many prospects, it seems that there's been a pretty big change in the stock of quite a few prospects. I guess that's what I'm trying to say.
I mean, I look at a guy like Marquise Chris, who really wasn't on the radar at all maybe 2 months ago, and now he's a top five pick. When do we really ever see something like that happen in a draft?
Yeah.
Waiters.
Dion Waiters, yes. I am still a member of Waiters Island, so I have to abstain from any further conversation on Dion Waiters. But Marcus Chris is an interesting player because you're right, he came out of nowhere, and all of a sudden he's a top five, at least a lottery pick. He's definitely going in the lottery, it seems. I don't know if that speaks to this draft maybe not being as strong, that a player like that can rise so quickly up the board. Is that kind of what you take from it, Steve?
You know, maybe a little bit of that. I think you sort of alluded earlier to that. You kind of know what's going to happen with the first two picks, but after that, it's anybody's guess. And I think that's just part of it. There just doesn't seem to be a whole lot of an identity to this draft, where usually you've got these guys who are going to fall into different tiers. And, you know, Marquise Chris, he brings a lot of really intriguing elements to the table. And he can score in bunches, he can shoot the ball a bit, he is young for his age, but also there's the concern that he doesn't rebound whatsoever. And so, you know, with having such a big red flag like that, it is a bit surprising that he's able to get so much traction like that. And I do think that in a stronger draft, that probably wouldn't be quite the case.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I think everybody who's evaluating this draft is just searching for someone outside of the top two to pop to them in some way, shape, or form. And I think that's one of the sort of sneaky nice things about having a pick down at 18 is that you could conceivably have a guy who, you know, there's an argument for a lot of guys who are going to be taken in the top five picks. It's just a really total morass of players after those top two.
Yeah, and I think the Pistons showed taking Darren Hilliard and even Spencer Dinwiddie, they're not afraid of taking a player that you know, isn't the top name on the board. You're right, if they have their own lists going. I was surprised with the pick of Darren Hilliard last year, and I know it was the second round, but you're right, at the pick of 18, there could be someone that maybe isn't on our radar that could pop for the Pistons, and that's the guy. And I think I trust the front office enough to make that pick, and hopefully it works out. When I'm looking at the guards in this draft, there's a few that I could see the Pistons really liking, and one of them is Wade Baldwin. Wade Baldwin out of Vanderbilt. I think there are certain players that fit what the Pistons might be looking for, and I'm wondering if a player like that might jump off the board for us. Is there anyone like that, Jacob, that you think might jump out to the Pistons at that pick?
Yeah, I said Baldwin earlier, and I really think that he's an awesome fit for the Pistons. I think another guy, I mean, I threw out so many names at the beginning that I kind of stole the thunder a little bit, but I think the guy that Draft Express actually has the Pistons taking right now, Diallo, I think he makes a lot of sense. I like him. He didn't really get a chance to show what he could do at Kansas, but he's one of those guys that when I watch him, he's just outstanding in practically every way except his size. And then he's got this amazing length, and I don't think he quite knows what he's doing out there yet, but I just don't think he's that far away, and I think he was really underutilized at Kansas this year, and the stats really just point to a completely different player that they just sort of failed to unearth. And as a backup center, a year down the road, maybe even a guy who can play some four. I think that that's a great fit, and he's a guy that I could see us going after. His SVG has proven that he really has a knack for sort of those undervalued assets.
And, you know, one thing I'll pick up is that wouldn't be a horribly dissimilar pick from when Orlando went with Daniel Orton while Stan Van Gundy was there. Stan Van, you know, that one obviously didn't quite work out well, but it at least shows a track history of this Van Gundy, who knows how much say he had in that pick, but he at least has been a part of a pick similar to that before. As a guy who, you know, really didn't get much playing time with his college team, and the goal was that, you know, maybe they fit the NBA game better.
Yeah, and there are definitely things about Diallo that fit the NBA game better probably than in college. I mean, just based on his athleticism, his length, you think he would be a good defender, a shot blocker, someone who can protect the rim. I know he just stands at, you know, 6'9", and I think he actually measured in at 6'7" without shoes, but I got a kick out of watching the draft combine when someone reminded me they wear shoes when they play, so that's the measurement that matters. So Cheick Diallo at 6'9" is a player that I think is very interesting in that spot, and I think having him at 18 to the Pistons, you know, I would be fine with that as someone who is probably capable of playing at the 4 and 5 and could give us some defense. And Jacob, you're right, is still probably figuring out how to play the game, and I think that's okay. We've got some minutes that he can play right away while he's, you know, still figuring it out. He doesn't have to play a big role here.
Well, and so one name I'll give you is another one who kind of fits that mold of someone who makes a lot of sense for the Pistons that we haven't mentioned yet would be Demetrius Jackson. He seemed to be a guy that has been jumping all around the different, sometimes going a little before the Pistons pick, sometimes after, but it seems like he has a good chance of being there. There's a lot to like about Jackson. He's athletic, he's explosive, he's shown that he can shoot the ball at, you know, sometimes better than others, but for me, I'm a little, I'm not entirely sold on him because his numbers don't really blow you away, especially for a guy who's going to be 22 years old when the season starts, but there are some ways that there's some indications that might be a part of Notre Dame's offense that was suppressing his numbers rather than any lack of productive ability.
Yeah, that's a good point. And that's what makes this process difficult is you have to kind of get an understanding of where they were playing and what type of opportunities they were given. And someone like Demetrius Jackson, you're right, his game is interesting. I think it fits the NBA better than how he was utilized at Notre Dame. He's someone that even at 6'2", I think has pretty good length and would be a pretty good defender just because he's really active. He's a very active player, both ends of the floor, and I think could be an interesting fit for the Pistons.
As a general rule, if a guy is a point guard and can create separation and is big, I'm going to like him a lot, and I do that with Jackson as well.
Yeah, he's definitely one of those players. Wade Baldwin is one as well, and Wade Baldwin also adds a wingspan that's almost 7 feet. To the mix. Jackson probably is the better scorer of the two. But if we're looking at point guard in the draft, and I guess it goes back to the question of if the Pistons want a rookie as their backup point guard. Do you, Steve, I'll start with you. Do you want a rookie as the backup point guard for the team next season?
Well, you know, it's an interesting thought. I think it depends on the kind of veteran that he'd be paired with. And, you know, the type of track history that he has. If we look at last year, when we were going into the summer league, it looked like it was Spencer Dinwiddie all the way. They still didn't even have Steve Blake at that point. It wasn't until Dinwiddie kind of crapped the bed in the summer league that they, you know, traded Quincy Miller away to get that insurance of Steve Blake. So I wouldn't be surprised if they did go with a lower level veteran to be able to, you know, give the, if they draft a point guard, to give that player a chance to really compete for the job. Whereas if you go for a guy who you're signing for a $20 million deal over 3 years, and then that they're probably not going to waste $7 million to have that guy sitting on the bench. So I think that's one of the things is that it depends on the type of veteran they go after. If if they have enough confidence to use this pick for a point guard, and then I think they should probably give him a chance to at least compete for the job to show that they're NBA ready.
Yeah, that's a great point. Jacob, how do you feel about having the a rookie as a backup? And what do you think the chances are going into next season with a rookie as the backup point guard?
Yeah, it's a really interesting thought. I don't know if you bring in sort of a scrap heap veteran, sort of like Blake, and then you bring in a rookie who you hope can win the job, that's not really solving the position. And you could still end up with, you know, a similar situation that we had last year. Van Gundy, I don't think, wants to do that again. He even sort of complained about the point guard situation on JJ Redick's podcast a couple weeks ago. So in some ways, I expect them to go and sign a point guard for 3 or 4 years that they feel really comfortable with. I mean, they don't really have any other real ways to spend their money this offseason in particular. So in that sense, since I expect them to do that, I do not expect them to take a point guard. Whether I'd be comfortable with it, that's a different story. I don't think I would be, because I just don't really trust rookies on contending teams in general.
Yeah, and I'm not sure how much Van Gundy would trust it as well, having a rookie in that spot, especially if it's the player you're giving 15 to 25 minutes a game. I'm not sure if that role would be available to a rookie. But Steve, I agree with you. If you bring someone in, you might as well give them the chance to prove it. And you've got summer league, and you know, going into training camp is a chance to find out. I think if we're going to, it's going to be a pick 18. I cannot imagine us taking a point guard with the 49th pick and giving that player an opportunity to back up Reggie Jackson. But that could be the spot for insurance. That could be the spot for possibly a third point guard. Are there any players like that you like in this draft as a potential third point guard?
Gary Payton the second.
Gary Payton too.
Yeah. I mean, he's a guy who I put probably way too high when I did a board back in like January or February or something. But I still like him. I still think he's just such a statistical outlier that you can't not take a chance on him.
So what is it that makes him a statistical outlier? I'm not too familiar with his game.
Well, he's 6'3", 184, super long wingspan. He's a senior. He's kind of old, but I mean, he's averaging 8.1 rebounds per game as a point guard, while also averaging, like, he had the best steal rate in the country. And in general, just guys that pop off the stat sheets that much, especially in terms of rebounds and steals, just shows that he's got either A, athleticism through his nose, he's got some kind of basketball sense through his... I think it's just, if you're looking at the 49th pick, I don't see how you can't pass up on someone who just pops off the stat sheet like that in a way that maybe one or two players do per year, and usually...
And, you know, watching him when he was playing at where was he at? Oregon State? He seems like he's got that athleticism, and he knows how to really use it. He puts it to work to his game. He was the type of point guard, it seemed, who would be letting his teammates do their thing for most of it. But when it came crunch time, he was willing to take over. I really enjoyed watching him play whenever I did have the opportunity. But for me, the guy who I'd be looking at would be Cape Elder. Just I mentioned him before, but he's just such a natural scorer. He seems like he's got all of those little tricks that it'll take for him to really be successful at the next level, while also, you know, having some distribution ability too. I think he's kind of an acquired taste personally, and so, you know, he's not 100% my personal choice, but I think he's got that type of talent that he'd be very much in consideration for that pick.
Steve, what do you think of Caris LeVert?
You know, I don't know. He seems like a tantalizing type of player. You know, with the type of size that he has and the shooting ability he's shown at times, that he seems to have, that he has a lot of really intriguing abilities. You know, his one of those that he doesn't seem to have is to be able to stay healthy. And I'm not entirely sure. I think he'd certainly be a consideration there. For me, I have trouble really seeing him be at that level, just because Florida, right? Oh yeah, there's Wade Baldwin. There's LeVert. They don't necessarily make their presence felt in that dramatic of a way. And that was one of the problems that Spencer Dinwiddie had, why he wasn't successful with the Pistons, is that he was whether it was a confidence thing with his early struggles or whatnot, but he would go through so many periods of time where he was just passive, or you just might not even notice he was on the floor, except when you noticed, hey, why does our offense kind of suck right now? Oh, okay, then what he's running point. And, you know, I kind of worry that that those two players may have a little bit of that, have a little bit of not quite have enough aggressiveness to really be successful.
Yeah, that's a good point, because as a Michigan fan and someone who watched quite a bit of Caris LeVert, even this last season in the few games he was able to play when he was hampered with all the injuries he had this past season, you're right. There's something deceiving about his game that when you look at the box score, you would think he's really just taking over the game and he's the best player on the floor. He's had some really great performances with Michigan, but you don't always see it when you're watching the game. There's something about the eye test he's not quite passing for me. I agree with you. And I'm just not sure what position he plays, at least for this Pistons. I just don't know how he would get on the floor and who he plays with. I've seen him listed at point guard and small forward, maybe like an Evan Turner type of player. I'm not sure. I think there's a lot of mystery around him and where he fits in the NBA. Jacob, what do you think? What do you think of him?
I think there's no mystery. I mean, I think he's just a 3-and-D wing role player, you know? A guy who shoots and defends on the wing. And, I mean, he doesn't really have to take over the game, in my opinion, with what he's going to be in the NBA. Not sort of like a guy who's going to be running your offense and scoring. I mean, I don't see any reason he can't defend the wing and hit the three. So, I mean, I guess that's why I'm definitely buying into him as a second-round pick. But I can sort of see that there are reasons people are scared off with the injury and stuff.
Yeah, and he was a pretty ball-dominant player at Michigan at times, and was someone that, you know, was actually a pretty good ball handler, so maybe that's the reason that I think actually Draft Express still has him listed as a point guard, shooting guard. But yeah, maybe we're all just overthinking it, and he is just a 3-and-D prospect, which would be fine. And actually, if we can grab him in the second round, and it seems he's going somewhere between 45 and 55, in most mocks that I've looked at, he might be available for the Pistons with that second round pick.
Well, one that I would be remiss not to mention, being an Indiana alum, is Yogi Ferrell. But I think at this point he's looking kind of on the outside, he's on the outside looking in at the draft. But he's another one of those smallish point guards who was extremely productive in his college career. He ran one of the more prolific offenses in the country. The downside is he is a legitimately bad defender, right? And so I think that's the big reason why he is probably not going to be drafted. But hey, got to throw my IU guy out there for it.
That's fair. Well, I did have a question I was going to pose to both of you. This was something a friend of mine had asked me, and I decided I would include it in the podcast. If the Pistons traded up to the number 3 spot, and Ben Simmons goes 1 to Philly, Brandon Ingram goes 2 to the Lakers, who do you want the Pistons to take at number 3?
Wow, that's really interesting.
For me, I'll take Marquese Chriss. I think there's definitely a bust prospect there for him, but you know, I would take him ahead of Dragon Bender any day. You know, a guy like Chris Dunn, I don't think we really need him. And plus, I think, you know, being a 22-year-old draft prospect, he, you know, didn't quite do as much as you would expect for a top 3 pick. Really, really, Marquese Chriss, I think, is the best combination of talent, potential, upside, and filling a need for the Piston. But if we were giving up anything significant to move into the top 3, and then you guys, I wouldn't be a very happy camper.
Yeah, I think the odds of moving up to number 3 are pretty low. I can't imagine Boston looking to acquire even more assets at this point. It seems they're trying to just sell some off. But yeah, let's say we're at that 3 spot. So you take Marquese Chriss. Jacob, who do you take?
I would go Bender, I think.
Okay. What do you like about Bender's game?
I think he does everything well. And he's an 18-and-a-half-year-old, 7-foot-1 guy who can play either big man position. And I just don't see how that's not a top 3 pick in practically any draft.
I mean, I don't really know if he's ever going to be the scorer to be like a legitimate MVP candidate. I don't think he ever will be, but the guy is kind of like Karl Anthony Towns, super, super, super light to me, in that you can't really point out a discernible weakness in his game. And in a guy who's 7 feet tall, I mean, that I'm a buyer on that all day of the week, every day of the week, not all day of the week.
24/7, 365. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, I saw a comparison of Dragan Bender to Hedo Turkoglu, and I kind of agree because you're right. He can do everything. He's 7 foot tall, but he handles the ball pretty well. He runs the floor extremely well. I don't think he would play the threes. I think he's definitely a four in today's NBA. And I think wouldn't be surprised if whoever drafts him tries to use him a bit at the five for some small ball. But yeah, he's a very intriguing prospect. And Jacob, yeah, I think I would take Bender as well at that three spot. Well, thank you everyone for listening. Make sure to subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. Make sure to look up previous episodes on blogtalkradio.com. And you'll also find all episodes on DetroitBadBoys.com, your home for all things Detroit Pistons. Make sure you're checking that daily throughout the offseason. That's your place to get all NBA news and notes. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and we'll be talking to you after the NBA draft.